Who never do for do? Yeah, wings with friends. I have wings with friends. You got to get the wings to be with the friends.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Wings with Friends. I'm your host, Mary Upchurch. And hey, it's been a while, and I'm so excited to be back with you here. I had the pleasure of working with a very talented, funny, and hilarious comedian this weekend. Pete George, how are you?
I'm good. I did forget my Victoria's Secret wings, so I apologize.
Yeah, Pete. The podcast is about wings.
Well, you know, I just, you have to have wings and a matching thong, as far as I'm concerned.
Pete, how would you describe yourself? Because I want to make sure I do it justice, so maybe hear it from you. You're a comedian, but you're so much more than that. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
You know, I just think, you know, it's interesting because I've told people this many times, like, I don't want to do a clean show and I don't want to do a dirty show. I want to do my show. And that includes a combination of so many things. I like being self-expressed, right? And even though I'm using the guitar, there's so much stand-up involved that I like allowing the audience to be self-expressed with me. So it's this dance between the audience and myself. I don't like just telling jokes, which I can do, but it's like I like that connection where people walk away after seeing the show as if they've not only experienced something, but I caused them to be more self-expressed in their own life. That's where I'm at. So
I like it. So yeah, I mean, I don't even want to call it just stand up. I mean, it was an experience. It was an event. You know, you had the first half was just like really funny jokes, and then you pull out your electric guitar, and I gotta say, you know how to play that thing.
I do. I do. Yeah. I mean, I played in
playing guitar.
I started when I was 16, and right now I'm. And my birthday's in a couple of days, actually. But I started pretty young, sort of young. And then, you know, I played piano before that. I played drums. I think I shared with you, my dad was the first accordion soloist in the Army at West Point. So I grew up around music. So that's how that all started. And then my uncle, he was a huge record rep from the 60s throughout the 90s. Like, he broke the band Rush into the U.S., I mean, he worked with like everybody. And so when I was in college back in, geez, in the 80s, I worked for him 2 days a week at MCA Records in Cleveland. Ooh. So I can get any albums that I wanted. I would go to concerts. It was such a great time. And I was in a band at the time in Cleveland. And then we were the ones that got the petition drive started to get the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland.
Wow.
So I was there for grand opening day and everything. And then, well, unfortunately, you know, year and a half, 2 years ago, my uncle passed from COVID. So summer before last, my cousins had his memorial at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
They had a band, they had food trucks, they had bars, they had his gold albums inside. It was really epic. He would have loved it. But, you know, so my whole life, I just grew up around music. And of course, you know, my God, stand-up comedy, right? When I was a kid, I mean, I loved even Jerry Lewis. I love Jerry Lewis. And then, you know, the Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian specials came out in the 80s, which I still have on beta tape. And it was just one of those things that I was so inspired at the time. I was in college and, you know, I just wanted to start doing stand-up. And then I was like, but I love music too. How can I just combine both? And that's how that started.
So yeah, let me see if I can paint the picture for our audience. You know, I was saying, you know, you've got probably about first half of like really funny jokes. So you pull out this guitar and just you're so good at it. I mean, you're playing every what I heard this weekend was like every like classic rock, every hard guitar rock, you know, act that you can think of. And you kind of do some crowd work there. You know, do you like Pink Floyd? Do you like Black Sabbath? What were some of the other ones that you played? Heart, that one got me too. When you hear the beginning.
Yeah, Barracuda.
Barracuda,
yeah.
You're like, let's go. You know, it's
yeah. My God. Tommy Two Tone from the 80s, Journey. My old closing bit, I used to put a shower cap on my head and I did the black version of Stairway to Heaven. And I mean, it was hysterical. It was funny because the only people that got offended over it were white people.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I had one time I had two black people literally in the aisle on the floor rolling laughing, you know? But, you know, with Pink Floyd, it's just all the classic stuff that, you know, most people, you know, still know and love.
Yeah,
So.
it was really fun. Because then there was always a twist in every song. We could have probably been very happy at a rock concert, but then obviously, like, there was a twist, there was a joke, there was a parody or something, and it made for a really fun show and was very interactive.
Yeah, it's funny because I'll have an audience, they'll get mad sometimes. We'll play the whole song and I'm like, it's not music, it's comedy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I can, but it's like, I don't want to, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to, it's a comedy club, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, you blended it really nicely. I saw Jerry Lewis in a play. You mentioned it this weekend too, and I was thinking I saw him in Damn Yankees, in Hollywood, like at the Pantages or somewhere. I remember in
How
high school.
long ago?
It was probably like 95, 96.
Yeah. They were Lewis and Martin were like the highest paid entertainers in the 40s. They were making like $40,000 a week.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It was incredible what they, you know, they were earning at the time. But, you know, and it's interesting because when I was a young teenager, I used to play my drums to Gary Lewis and the Playboys, which was his son's band, right?
Yeah.
And I would put the album on with my headphones and play my drums all the time. And of course, you know, the neighbors would call my parents and say, it's too loud, we can hear it, you know. But as an adult, when I was married the first time, I was at my wife's best friend's parents' house for Christmas. And I walk in, this is a suburb of Cleveland. I walk in, and who is sitting there but Gary Lewis? He's like, that's crazy. And I told him what album I had, and he goes, I don't even have that album.
Oh, wow.
So that's why, you know, I just grew up with all that stuff, you know, comedy and yeah.
What made you go more of a comedy route than a music route? Because you're certainly like I was wondering if you were in a band. You said you had been in a band, but like what made you choose more comedy route?
You know, that's a really good question because when I was a kid, I was so shy, I couldn't even look at my parents. Horribly shy and suffered with a lot of anxiety. And it's weird that I would choose stand up of all things. I did have a therapist tell me once, well, you didn't choose stand up. Stand up chose you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, here's the crazy part. The last band I was playing in, when it came time for me to solo, I would get so nervous sometimes I would make mistakes, right? But then I do stand up while I'm still in the band. And all of a sudden, when I'm doing solos in the band, I'm just all over the place. It was like stand-up caused me to really expand my circle to the point where anything less than became easy.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. So I could tell you how I
How
started.
did you start?
So there was only a few comedy clubs in the country when I started, right? And one of them was the Cleveland Comedy Club. And it was this long, narrow building in downtown Cleveland, really old. And the entire wall, both sides, had like 4-inch by 5-inch squares of Mona Lisa paintings. So it was almost like was so irritating because it was just Mona Lisa everywhere, right? And this is the crazy part. So you had to go there on a Sunday night, you had to get in line. And I remember standing in line for 2 hours. Just to get stage time in snow.
Oh, wow.
Freezing. They wouldn't even let you in the lobby. And there was a long line of people. So what happened is you had to do 10 minutes your first time up, and it was a competition,
Oh,
and
wow.
half the comics were already professional. So, you know, we're talking about pressure, right?
Yeah.
And I remember the first time up, I didn't want anybody to see me, and I was squatting down in the back, and when they introduced me, I literally couldn't stand up. My knees gave out. And then I made it to my feet. I went up and I did my 10 minutes and I killed and I won.
Nice.
Yeah. And then you win 50 bucks. But you could only win the 50 bucks once a month. So my incentive was to wait another month, you know, and not go up at all in between. So I did that 3 months in a row and I won each time, all three times. So I was like, I think maybe I can do this. So, you know, I just started doing open mic nights and competitions around Cleveland for 2 years. And then a comedian magician from Cleveland said he needed a new opening act to tour with him. So he booked me at a club that he booked, and I, thank God, it killed that night. And and that was it. We went on tour for a week and a half to Iowa. And then after that, he would just book 6 weeks at a time all over the country, Florida, everything. He would book everything, and I would just, we'd travel together, and I would open for him for 2.5 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, and that's where I learned where I could watch his show every night for 2 years, and it felt as if it was the first time I was seeing it. He had a way of being on stage. It was always fresh, even with the same material. And I think that's one of the things I kind of took away from that was like, how do you make it authentic and connected to the audience, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. What a great way to like just cut your teeth and get that experience. I'm going to come back and ask you about your acting career. But first, this is the podcast about wings, and we didn't have any wings on this podcast, and that's okay. But yeah. I want to ask you your feelings about wings, because you do not eat chicken wings.
No, I used to eat them, but it's kind of a thing like I just kind of not, I wasn't crazy about like even like dark meat anymore. I eat white meat all the time. Like I just made chicken piccata last week from scratch. That was incredible. Right?
Yeah. That's not just wings. Wing, Pete.
Well, sometimes I'll eat wings, but I still do. Sometimes I actually do.
I get it. It's a lot. It's a very primal way to eat chicken. You know, you're eating it off the bone and they're little and they're messy and the sauce and all of this. But now I'm curious about wings in Cleveland. If Cleveland
has. Oh, they're huge in Cleveland.
I know.
Huge. Yeah.
Another one of your credits that was just so fascinating, and I love talking about it. You were in The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, isn't that great? I mean, of all movies,
never heard of it.
Right? What happened was in the 90s, I had an agent in Akron, Ohio, and she said, "Hey, they're doing this film in Mansfield, which is like an hour and 15 minutes from Cleveland." She said, "I can set up an audition for you." So I went and auditioned, and you know, I did well. And then the casting director said, "Well, we need people for 2 months this summer," and I had not booked any shows for that 2 months. And I was like, "Yeah." She said, "Well, even though it's quote background, it's called a core convict, which means you're going to be around the main actors through the entire film. You're part of that group." To be aged from the 40s to the 60s.
Oh, wow.
So I was in like, I ended up, I mean, I worked on it for 2 months. So I have to back up a little bit because this is kind of interesting. So I was in LA like months before that, and I was trying to get things going, and I was visiting here, and I couldn't, nothing was really happening. And they said, "Well, you got to be SAG." And so I wrote down my Tony Robbins goal setting workshop. I said to myself, "What am I going to do? Okay, that's it. I'm going to be in a movie for 2 months in Ohio this summer. I'm going to get in a big commercial, a SAG commercial, and I'm going to get in with a big casting director over in Pittsburgh." Which is crazy because I sent a letter to the casting director right before we started filming Shawshank. The next thing you know, I get booked on this movie in that 2 month time frame. In the middle, we had 4 days off. The casting director called me for an audition the next day. I drove to Pittsburgh. I came home. She called. She said, "You're the director's first choice. Come back for a call back tomorrow." And I did. And I got home. She said, "You got booked." And then the next day we shot the SAG commercial. So like these three huge things all happened within that time frame.
Because of Tony Robbins?
It was because I was so intentional, like I was causing the matter. Remember when I told you the whole story about getting to Reno?
Yeah. 8-hour
drive and getting into the casino 15 minutes before I'm on stage. Like when you're that intentional, it's like, it's incredible what we can create, right?
Absolutely. Do you still practice that kind of intentionality, vision, goal setting?
I do, but a lot of the time I actually do it on the negative side without realizing it.
Oh, tell me
Right?
more.
You get into a negative loop, and you're, because everybody does, and all of a sudden you're going down this path, and the things you don't want to start to show up. And that's all because I'm being cause and the matter of it, right? And I have to kind of put a stick in my own spokes and catch myself. Thank God, I do a Zoom with three other coaches. Who are in the entertainment industry every week. I've been doing it for 3 years. Which, by the way, I trained for 18 years as like a life coach in LA, and I coached 10,000 people. So that's why it's. But getting back to Shawshank, so they asked me when I was there. They said, "Hey, do you want to do the shower scene?" And I was like, "Yeah, why not? I mean, okay." And so what they did was, if you remember the shower scene, they had like 15 convicts lined up on each side facing each other, and there was a pipe in the middle with the shower heads coming down on all of us, all naked. The whole crew was in there, and the camera's in the middle of us at the end with Frank Darabont, the director, and they're setting up the shot, and we're all angled away. They don't want any frontal nudity. And I hear someone say, "No, I still see dick." And they get on a PA. Pete George, turn to the left more.
Just dicks everywhere.
I know, right? And I'm like, oh man. And I'm like, and people are like, "You're in the shower scene." I'm like, "Yeah, but it made me union. That's why it's called stick." And then Tim Robbins walks in. He's the only one that's got a partial cover, right? And the water was ice cold because the prison had been closed. There was no. And we're about to start, and Tim's like, "Wait a minute." He goes, "All these actors, they're in here working for almost nothing." He said, "You people need to get this water heated because we're going to be in here for hours." He said, "And when you get it heated, you call me and I'll come back." And he walked off set.
Dang,
And within 20 minutes, somehow they had it all heated, and it was great.
wow,
But,
that's good. That's nice.
yeah. I did go to the 25th anniversary 2 years ago too. That was awesome.
I've heard of different shows and things doing, anniversary. I heard Band of Brothers does that. I didn't know Shawshank does it. So, what was everybody got back together for a reunion?
Yeah, well, what? So the 20th anniversary a few years back. This is interesting. I found out that they were having it here in LA. They were having it at the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, right? And I was like, "Oh my God, I gotta find a way to get in on this." I mean, I know it was like background, but I gotta find a way. So I contacted the casting director, the original casting director in Ohio through Facebook. And he said, "Hey, I live here now. Can we, can you get me in?" And so I ended up somehow getting a ticket from her. But I wasn't on the VIP list. I was in this long, long line outside because it was open to the public, 1,000 people in the theater, right? In the back. But I wanted to be with the actors. So there's this glass wall at the Academy, and I could see Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman, and I could see the people from Ohio, the casting people, the mayor, whatever. And so I walked up to the glass door, and there was a security guard there, and I go, "Look it, I got a ticket. And I was in the movie, and I showed him a picture of me on set." And he opens the door and he lets me in.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And I was like, and then someone walks up and they go, "What are you doing here?" And I showed her, she goes, "Don't move." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm busted." And she grabs someone and she goes, "Would you escort Mr. George up to the theater?" And then I walk up and I see the casting director and all the people from Ohio from the city. And I said, "Yeah, I'm going to be way in the back." And they're like, "No, you're not. You're up here with us." And I'm telling you, it was like another way that I caused it. And then the city of Mansfield, Ohio, where the prison is, they had a there's a winery there, and they had a special red wine made up called Reformatory Red. It was a Morgan's character, and they gave me a bottle. I actually have it here.
Oh my gosh, that's so neat.
And I have a metal tray from the mess hall scene.
Oh, that is cool. That's a cool keepsake.
And then you remember the tree that got the big tree, the rock wall. So that got hit by lightning and it died. So the wood shop turned it into ballpoint pens, and I have a pen.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And then the other thing I have, which is really rare, the last day of filming, one of the production assistants took the, you know, the call sheet. And had it silk screened onto t-shirts, the front and the back, with artwork, Rita Hayworth in the Shawshank, the top of the prison. So I have it. I've never worn it, but I could probably eBay that for a shitload of money.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so unique. What an experience, Pete.
Right?
Gosh.
So 2 years ago, when I was invited to the 25th at the prison, they had 40,000 people there for the weekend.
Dang.
Almost all the actors were there. The director was there. It was incredible. And I was asked to be on two actor Q&A panel with the audience, which was a blast.
So, yeah, and I bet it was entertaining too, because you're not just an actor. Like, you're an entertainer. You know, you're a comedian, and you're, you know, you can, I bet it was a little more fun with you there.
Well, it was a lot more fun because everybody else on the panel were extras who weren't even in the industry. At one point, the mediator or moderator, he hands me the microphone in front of like hundreds of people. And he's like, well, what was your experience? And I said, well, there was like one scene out in the field. And as the camera's panning past us, I picked up a log and put it on my shoulder looking away from camera. So I knew it was me. And he goes, oh, that's interesting. And I said, and then like the roofing scene with the tar, when the camera goes over Tim and looks down, there was two of us. I threw a shovel on my shoulder so I knew it would be me.
Why did you think to do that? Did you or
just so I would know how I stood out? I would when I'm watching the movie. So the guy says in front of everybody, he goes, "Oh, so I guess every scene you were in, you had something on your shoulder," and they laughed. And I said, "Yeah, you should have seen what I had on my shoulder in the shower scene." And it got like a roar.
Oh, there's Pete.
Oh yeah. And then the next day we did it again somewhere in the prison. We did with an audience another Q&A, and the one guy said he was really nervous. He's like, "Oh, I thought I was going to get in trouble all the time because, you know, they had me in the middle of the courtyard of the prison on the basketball court, and I'm trying to like do my role and someone kept hitting me in the face with a basketball, and I thought I was going to ruin it. I was going to get fired." And he was all nervous and stuff telling this. And then the guy says to me, "Pete, like, what were you doing out in the yard?" And I said, "Oh, I kept throwing a basketball at some guy's head." You know, and that got a laugh. So it was fun to make light of the whole situation. And then there was a guy walking around at the anniversary. His entire back was a Shawshank tattoo, real. The prison, the face of Morgan and Tim, it was incredible.
Like a mural, sort of?
It was a real tattoo, and he was walking around with his shirt off.
That's crazy. I mean, this was the time for him to show it.
Right, so I was telling people there, I said, "Did you see that guy?" I said, "His wife had a tramp stamp, and it said, Brooks was here, so was Red." And I said, and then his daughter had one too. And it said, "Get busy living or just get busy."
That would have been the best accompaniment tattoo. That's hilarious.
So that was, so I'm looking forward to the next one, you know?
So are they doing them every 5 years?
I think they're going to do it every 5 years. Yeah.
That is cool.
In fact, I ran into Tommy, you know, the young guy who got shot.
Oh yeah.
A restaurant here in Studio City. So we were talking for a while a couple years ago.
I remember him. Was he on Melrose Place? He was on something that I remembered him. I'm like, oh, that's
Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love that. So you've done so much, Pete. You've got music and comedy and acting. And when we worked together, you had just come off of a week, 14 shows at the Tropicana in Las Vegas.
That was fun.
What do you want next? What are you looking forward to? What's, you know, your Tony Robbins program? You know, what are you writing down now for what the future holds?
You know, I created a sitcom a few years ago, and it's semi sitting on the shelf, and it's really good and unique. And just one thing seems to get in, you know, one thing after another gets in the way. And I need to get intentional about that and just see what I can create. I mean, besides that, I'm trying to help three people on their feature films. And a friend of mine, he's shooting his film in Paris. Nice. In the fall. And he's got some really big names attached to it. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'll be working on that. I've done some things to help him out and such. I need to mention having a role on it. And then there's a couple other films too that I'm trying to get going and, you know, looking for a new agent. You know, it's just, you're always trying to just recreate everything all the time.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I wish you all of that success. What are your next comedy dates?
I've got like 6 weeks off. I didn't really pay that much attention to my bookings. It's weird. I've got dates in December already, right?
Nice.
In Canada. But it's okay because I'm okay with everything. And it allows me the time just to be home and work on a lot of other stuff that really is going to take me to a much bigger level.
Yeah.
When I'm on the road all the time, you know, you get into that drone mode of just doing your show over and over. And mm-hmm. It's sometimes hard to break out of that to work on other stuff, I find.
Yeah, so. You're absolutely right. Like that downtime to just focus and be creative, like it's so valuable. I love it. I had such a good time at Grand Comedy Club in Escondido.
And why?
Well, you were great. You were really nice to me. That's all I always hope, you know, is the headliner is nice and, you know, like I can be part of the group. And sometimes you don't feel, I'm talking for myself, don't feel part of the group. So you kind of just be quiet and stay on the side. But I felt like in the middle of things, which was nice. Adam Wasserman is a really cool guy. He was fun.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of times that clubs, the way you feel at a club always starts from the top.
Yeah.
And Adam creates that. So, you know, it's easy to be more comfortable. And the thing is, the way I see it is like, I'm not the show. We're the show.
Yeah.
We're all in our own lane, but we're on the same highway.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was good.
Yeah. Rene Lancaster, he was great too. And I loved on the last day, he kind of loosened up and was like, he had some drinks. And I was like, are you drunk, Rene?
I know. He was like, he put his hand out like this, you know, he's put his hand out and I thought he wanted to shake my hand, but I couldn't figure out if he wanted me to put his number in my phone and he kept standing there with his, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, I'm looking at him and he goes, oh man, don't get all weird on me. I'm like, get weird on you. And then he goes, I'm kind of drunk.
What did he want with the hand?
I couldn't tell if he wanted to shake my, I thought, is he asking me on a date? What the hell? Straight. Is he straight? I don't know. What the hell? It was funny. I was like, and then I was like, oh, he's just kind of hammered.
Yeah. My, you know, that area, that part of town is kind of my hometown. And so for people after to say, hey, I went to Rancho Buena Vista High School also. Oh, I'm class of this or that. Like, I haven't really had that in comedy yet. Not really.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just really neat to like somewhat be in I'm not from Escondido. I'm from Vista originally. So, but it's this next town. It's, you know, it's all the same North County, San Diego. So that was really special for me.
It is nice when that happens, right? I mean, I did a show at my 10-year reunion and it was horrible. I was like, ain't doing that again.
Right.
But then years later, when I did the Hard Rock in Cleveland, I had a lot of people from high school come out and it was quite different because it was a different setting.
Yeah.
One thing I used to do, and then I got busted, was that whatever town I was going to be in, I was on classmates.com.
Yeah.
I would add myself to all the high schools in the area and all like 20 years of graduating classes. And then I would say, hey guys, I'm back in town, you know, and I would invite everybody and all these people would come out. And after the show, like, so like, what year did you graduate? You know? Oh, well, I ended up moving away, you know, and I was like, and then finally classmates, like I got caught and I got kicked off, but I'm like, shit, I got a lot of people come out to the show though.
That's a great idea. Facebook groups have that. Like I have a Facebook group with my class that nobody posts in until I'm like, hey, I'm in town, but haven't gotten a lot of yield from it. But it is satisfying to let those jerks know that, hey, I'm performing in your town.
Believe me, like I told you at the club, my old big bit was about being in a learning disability program in high school. And to know that I really was for 3 years and felt like a zero. And then you post on your Facebook class page the marquee in Vegas of your face on the Laugh Factory, right at the Tropicana.
Yeah.
And then you post that on there, and it's like, and then you get like girls, "Hey, you still single?" And I'm like, "Yeah, but you're 60." And no.
That is like, yeah, that's some vision board stuff. That's so good.
Yeah.
Big mistake. It's your pretty woman moment of like,
Right, I
you're
know.
lost.
Do you have a vision board?
Yeah, I have a few. I mean, I have a vision board. I have like this notebook vision board. I think next weekend I'm going to be working on an, like a notebook, and I like to goal plan and do all that stuff.
Sure.
Because it works.
Well, yeah, when I was dating my second wife, I needed a new acoustic guitar, right? And I couldn't spend too much, so I went into Sam Ash in Hollywood. She went with me, and I played like a $500 guitar, and it was like, eh. And then like an $800 one, it was still eh. And then like $1,200, which was out of my range, and I'm like, eh. And then I see one sitting there, and I pick it up, and like one strum, and she looks at me, she goes, "That's it."
Oh.
And I look, and it was like $2,500. I'm like, "No way." So we leave, and she's like, "You really want that?" I'm like, "Yeah." She goes, "All right, that's my gift to you." So we went in and bought it. And I was still in my own apartment at the time. I was so excited. I God. And I go home, and I'm lying on my bed, and I happen to look up at my collage of my vision board. And at the bottom is a picture of that exact color, make, model, style, exactly that guitar. And I had forgotten that it was even on the board.
Wow.
And I was like, "This is incredible, right?" So my son was like, I don't know, I think 10 years old at the time. And I told him about a vision board because he saw The Secret when he was like 7, and he totally got it. And so I'm like, "You got to make a vision board." So he does, right? And then he comes to LA, both my kids, and my wife's, because we were getting married at the time, her son gave my son his old little iPod. And he's so excited. He goes, "Dad, I got an iPod." And I'm like, "Well, that's great." He goes, "No, you don't understand. It was on my vision board, and I got an iPod. It works." And I said, "Well, what else did you put on your vision board?" And he goes, "Nothing. Just a picture of an iPod." So now he gets the lesson of focus too,
Yeah,
right?
I love that so much. I think it's so important with like what we're doing, just making things happen. It's so good. Well, this has been so good, Pete George. I could talk to you for forever. But what do you want people to do? Where can they follow you? What would you like people to?
Well, check out my website, www.petegeorge.tv. There's also my merchandise page that I have, flash drives and guitar pick necklaces.
Cool merch.
Yeah, and if anybody, especially comics, wants a website built, I'm building websites for people. I just built two for comedians. And it's really good, I think, to have a comedian build it who can build it, because there's so many aspects you need that are important. What else can I tell you? I mean, all my social media stuff. Come out and see the show, have fun. If you choose to be offended, that's on you, not me.
Absolutely.
As it's and by the way, last thing I'll say about that, it's so funny that when people do get offended, I've noticed they never get offended over what you say. They get offended over the story they made up in their head about what you say. And when they tell you what it is, it's not at all what you said.
Yeah.
But people don't want to be responsible for that. And you have to just kind of separate yourself from that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. But we all have free will, and if you don't, they don't have to
Yeah,
come to
absolutely.
the
The comedy club. Oh my God.
comedy club. Well, P. George, I hope to work with you again soon. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks for listening in to Wings with Friends.
Yeah, go see Mary. She's freaking awesome. One of the best openers I've had in years.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye.